Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12. Jesus gets into hot water with the religious Taliban. If you'd like a Bible in your hand, please grab one off the stacks at the back. They're there to borrow. But let's dive into Matthew chapter 12, which says, at that time, Jesus went through the cornfields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some ears of corn and eat them. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath. He answered, haven't you read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple desecrate the day and yet are innocent? I tell you that one greater than the temple is here. If you had known what these words mean, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Going on from that place, he went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, they asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? He said to them, if any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And then he really annoyed them. He said to the man, stretch out your hand. So he stretched it out, and it was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus. Aware of this, Jesus withdrew from that place. But many followed him, and he healed all their sick, warning them not to tell who he was. This was to fulfill what was spoken to the prophet Isaiah. Here is my servant whom I have chosen, the one I love, in whom I delight. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the nations. He will not quarrel or cry out, no one will hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out, till he leads justice to victory. In his name the nations will put their hope. You can get carried away with something that isn't sensible, reasonable, or even lawful to get carried away with. How about this? It may have resonances from the modern day. I will leave you to make the fairly obvious comparisons. In the 18th century, there was a British company called the South Sea Company. And it was granted a monopoly to trade with South America under a treaty with Spain. And it became very, very popular. In 1719, they proposed a scheme by which it would buy more than half the national debt of £7.5 million, plus approximately £1.3 million in bribes. National debt at the moment is some, how many trillion? Don't ask. The company then set up its stock, talked up its stock with the most extravagant rumours of the value of its potential in the New World. And all this money, all they're going to discover all these riches in the New World, you see. And its stock just rose and rose. Soon everybody was buying it. At the time the scheme was proposed, it was £128 a share. In January 1720, it hit £175 in February, £330 in March, and £550 at the end of May. And it kept going. By early August, it had peaked at £1,000. The country went wild. Stocks increased, all the other stocks increased, And all kinds of schemes were made. Porters and ladies' maids, became kind of rich by buying and selling these stocks overnight. And people were investing, the bishops were investing their money, the gentry, the lords, and members of parliament were investing their savings in these stocks, which were going up and up and up, were going to make them rich. All kinds of schemes were formed at that time. One was floated to buy the Irish bogs, another to manufacture a gun that would fire square cannonballs. And my favourite was another one for carrying on an undertaking of great advantage, but no one is to know what it is. And £2,000 was invested in that. People went wild, and then the South Sea Company bubble burst, and the shares crashed almost overnight by the end of September to £150. Suicides became a daily occurrence. The mob rose up on the streets. The Postmaster General took poison, and his son, who was Secretary of State, avoided disaster by fortuitously contracting smallpox and dying. There were 462 members of the House of Commons and 112 peers who were involved in the crash. And it was an awful mess. It took a long time to get the country out of the debt. Now, that couldn't possibly happen in our days, of course. But the point is, you can get involved in something until you lose all sense of reality. Can you not? Whether it's selling subprime mortgages, or investing in the dot-com bubble, you can lose all sense of reality. I've seen it close up firsthand with what's known as gold fever, prospecting for gold in the area of Brazil I worked in. Some people lost all sense of proportion and common sense. And you can do the same with religion. You can get so hung up on some aspect or one aspect or several aspects of religion that you can lose sight of the more important whole. And the result is that sometimes religion can get a very bad name. I came across this PowerPoint, this little bit of graffiti which I'll show. Somebody had written on the sign, "Please clean up after your dog." And somebody had crossed out dog and written God. "Please clean up after your God." Religion can have a bad name, and some people can feel annoyed and angry at God. Thank you. It's not the most pleasant of graffiti, I have to say. But this, in a sense, is what Jesus was facing, because at heart, I think, he and the Pharisees disagreed about many things, but most of all, they disagreed about the character of God. Who is God and what's God like? The Pharisees had lost all sense of reality as far as what God wanted was concerned. They'd lost sight of God. They'd lost him in a network, a bog of stupid and pointless rules. And Jesus confronts their stifling sanctimoniousness. He reminds us that religion, right religion, is based on the grace of God, on the character and the love of God. And he falls foul this particular time with the Sabbath. Now, there's nothing wrong with the Sabbath. The Sabbath was, in fact, began in the Bible. It's there in the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 to 11. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. The Israelites were obliged to take a day off a week. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals. Even the oxen and the horses were to have a day off a week to chew the cud in peace and holiness. Cool? Even slaves were given a day off a week. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on a Sabbath day, on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Nothing wrong in taking a day's Sabbath, a day's rest, every week. In fact, it's here in written, it's kind of written into creation, and it's commanded to us all. Nothing wrong in that. Around the exilic time, round about the turn of the 6th century, the prophets began to remind people of this. Jeremiah in chapter 17, verse 19-23. Isaiah 58:13-14. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath of delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way, not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the heights of the land, to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. So who is the Sabbath to benefit? God or the human race? Who gets the benefit? You're looking at me in absolute science. Think about it. We do. We get the benefit. It's for the human race to enjoy and get the benefit. And so they began to enforce it. Nehemiah 13:15. The governor says this: in those days I saw men in Judah treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in grain and loading it on donkeys together with wine, grapes, figs and all other kinds of loads. They were bringing all this into Jerusalem on the Sabbath. Therefore I warned them against selling food on that day. I actually threatened to beat them up. And they stopped. And because look, you are missing out on God's blessing. It's supposed to give you a good day, a day of joy. It's supposed to bring you relief from work, set you free, and give you a donkey a break. Look, you're making your poor donkey work 7 days a week. Give your donkey a day off a week, poor thing. Let it wander the fields and think its donkey thoughts in peace. It's a good thing. Even our trade unions, secular though they are, believe in the Sabbath, believe in time off. No one should be made to work 7 days without a rest. But from a law of love and grace, from something that was meant to be a blessing, it turned into a set of petty rules and burdens. So Jesus is saying, firstly, your religion should serve people's interests. The Sabbath should be for the benefit of people. If we turn to chapter 12, the beginning of, Jesus is walking through the cornfields. Disciples are hungry. They begin to pick some ears of corn. They pick them, and so what do? You pick fields of corn. How are you going to eat it? Well, you do two things. First, you do three things. First, you pick it. Then you rub it together to separate the kernels of the seeds of the corn bits. I've lost the word entirely, but never mind. Separate the corn, right? And then you separate it and you eat it. Yep. And then you throw away what you don't use. Now you see, the problem is this. The rabbis had said, yes, we must not work on the Sabbath. But what's work? Let's define work. We don't want to sin against God. Let's define work between us. And they came up with 39 categories of forbidden acts. Sowing, ploughing, reaping, binding sheaves, threshing, winnowing, selecting, grinding, sifting, kneading, baking, shearing, wool washing, wool beating, wool dyeing, wool spinning, weaving, weaving two threads, separating two threads, tying, untying, sewing two stitches, tearing, trapping, slaughtering, flaying, cutting hide, salting meat, curing hide, scraping hide, writing two letters, erasing two letters, building, tearing a building down, extinguishing a fire, kindling a fire, hitting with a hammer. These are all work, they said. If you do any of those, that's work on a Sabbath. Who says, actually? But they do, anyway. They chose to define that. And then, of course, everything else you do, does it fit into one of those categories? Well, yes, it does, really. Jesus' disciples, they plucked corn. Well, that's harvesting. That's one of them. It's only a head of corn. You know, it's only a bit of... It's not hardly harvesting a field. Is it just picking one as I walk past? No, it's harvesting. And then they rub together. Well, that's threshing, you see. No, it's not. Just rubbing it together, that's threshing. And then you threw away what you didn't eat. That's winnowing. So that's three sins in one mouthful. Modern day Jews have the same problems, you know, the Orthodox ones. They look at switching on a light switch and switching off a light switch, and they decide that that is the equivalent of lighting a fire. So if you go into an Orthodox Jew's home, you won't find light switches. You'll find dimmers. I'm not making this up, trust me. And instead of switching it on and off, they dim it, because that's not extinguishing, that's just turning it down, that's fine. They turn it off, it's work, it's a sin. They won't drive a car on the Sabbath, because it goes bang, yeah? Bang, that's kindling a fire, it goes bang. You see, inside the engine, bang, 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 in fact. That's sin, 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 sin. Therefore, you must not drive a car. And they walk. They walk. One of my friends at school is a Jew. He's an atheist. He's a Jew. His father is still alive, a practicing Jew. I don't know if he still does it. But his dad lived quite away from the synagogue. So he used to drive half the way, park with a car so that nobody would see it, and then walk the rest to make it look as though he'd walked all the way. I think, well, what's the point in this? You know, who is the Sabbath for? If it exists for us, then we ought to be allowed to drive our car and go to worship God on it. Why not? It exists for us, not for God. It exists for our benefit, for our joy. We should be doing it. And Jesus makes the point. He said, look, David and his men, they were running away and they were hungry, and they got to the priestly enclosure around the altar, and they said, you've got any bread for us? The only bread they had was consecrated on the altar that only the priests could eat. But David's men were starving, so the priest gave them the food. The Sabbath, holy things, can be shared. If people are starving, if people are hungry, and David's men, he thought, were on a mission, actually running away, but they lied to him, and it caused all kinds of problems. You can read the story there in 1 Samuel chapter 21 and the things that follow. But Jesus said, listen, make sure your religion serves people's interests. Make sure it serves their interests, because God is here to bless the human race. So his laws are for our good and for our enjoyment. And second thing, Jesus says, look, you should focus on the Creator, not on the Creator. Verse 5. Haven't you read in the law, the Sabbath, the priests of the temple desecrate the day and yet are innocent? He said you should focus on God, because on Sabbath day the priests work. Ministers work on Sundays. I have to take Thursday off. Yeah? But that's okay. Look, you know, you're focusing on the Creator, not on the creation. And that's good. He truly believes that he's the Lord of the Sabbath. In the equivalent verse in Luke 6, verse 5, he says, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. You should be focusing on God, not on the day. Should have time for God. It's not about cramming as many rules as you can, to be absolutely strict that you're doing everything right. It's about focusing on God and your relationship with Him. It's about a relationship with God, not about a set of rules. The Pharisees had lost all sense of proportion, you know? Like the South Sea bubble, they completely lost touch with reality. It was about drawing closer to God. Focusing on the Creator, not the creation. Supposedly on the Sabbath, you were supposed to look around and just sense the wonder of God. Say, oh, it's good to be alive. So good to be alive. So good to know God's goodness. But instead, no. They thought, oh, I've got to be careful. I must follow all the rules, otherwise I will be sinning. They'd lost sense of God's goodness and His greatness and His blessing. And a religion that pleases people more than it pleases God. And it says, if you'd known what these words mean in verse 7, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. It's about, they were trying to please people more than God. There was no sense of mercy, no sense of knowing God's goodness and God's greatness. There's no sense of just recognizing there's something good happening. No sense at all of it. The sense that God wants to be gracious, not to condemn. You come across Christians who are just kind of always on to other Christians, you know, just looking out for someone to find fault with. I don't drink, by the way. I'm completely teetotal. It doesn't mean you have to be, just that I am. There are all sorts of reasons for that. I'm not standing on a moral pedestal to say that I am. No objection to you having a drink at all if you want to. But I just to say that I don't, give you an idea. And in Brazil, where I was, most evangelicals avoided drink completely. And the hardline Pentecostals, especially, that was a dreadful sin. And we had a huge church of them in our town, and they were very strict on all sorts of things. They had more rules than the EU, and they were always looking for a way to bring people down, to find fault with you. You know, they could find that you were sinning. Oh, they felt so good about themselves if they could feel just superior to you. It made their day, bless them, you know? And I had a friend who wasn't a Christian, neither he nor his wife. And great guy, we got on very well. And I was walking down the street one day, and he was sitting in an outdoor cafe with a couple of friends having a beer. And I said, oh, hi, how do you? He called me, hi, Peter, how do you? Come and sit down. So I just sat down on a seat with him right by the pavement, and he and his mate were there. They had a couple of beer bottles there and a half empty glasses. It was a baking hot day and we sat down. I didn't have anything to drink at all, but that was how I just sat down and we talked a little bit, because I was hoping that one day this lad would accept Jesus as his saviour. As it did, I noted just out of the corner of my eye one of these members of this Pentecostal church go by. I could tell them by their dress uniform. I won't go into detail, but I knew straight away which church she belonged to. You know? And as she walked past, I got this most awful tut 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 and expression of total disgust, and I rushed. She looked at me. She'd seen the minister of the Baptist church sitting with the sinners drinking beer. Actually, what she'd seen was the minister of the Baptist church sitting with his friends hoping to tell them about Jesus. But that's what she chose not to see. And the Pharisees were like that, you know. There was no sense of mercy. I want mercy, says God. I want mercy. I'm a God of mercy. I want you to have mercy. But they didn't. It was a religion that, frankly, did more harm than good. Verse 9 and so on. It says, you're going on from there. he found a man in the synagogue, and we heard the story. So he tells him a story about the sheep that falls into a hole and you pull it out. He says, do good with your religion. Make sure your religion makes you do good. Not stand idly by being critical. Not standing by being judgmental. Not standing by feeling so righteous because you are better than they. He says, make sure your religion does good. It's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. These rules, he said, exist to make you a better person. Make you a better person. Leon Morris says, Jesus was not simply arguing that oppressive regulations should be relaxed and a more liberal attitude adopted. He was saying that his opponents had missed the whole point of his holy day. They had missed the whole point of this holy day. Religion that diverts energy and resources away from healing and helping. It's like the South Sea bubble. You can get so absolutely obsessed by something, you lose sense of reality. There's churches in America where they handle snakes as part of their worship, you know? What's that about? You've lost it because, the Bible says the believers will get bitten by snakes and survive. Well, the Apostle Paul did. But doesn't mean that we've got to go and find snakes to get bitten by and survive. You kind of, you take one thing and lose all sense of reality, do you not? It's about mercy. It's about turning us into better people. The world is tired of toxic religion, you know? The world is fed up with bad religion. The world sees on its television news every day of the week examples of bad religion from all around the world, whether it's Muslim, Hindu, Christian, Buddhist, whatever. It just sees bad religion. It sees bad atheism as well, by the way. And the world's tired of it. It says, come on, you know, just show me something good. And Jesus, this is Jesus' whole point. We should be showing the world something good. Isaiah 55, verse 2. Why spend money on what is not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen to me, and eat what is good, and your soul will delight in the richest of fare. God's religion. God's religion. God's rules make our life better. Just remember that. God's rules are there to make our life better and the lives of our neighbours better. Band, please do join me on the platform. Let's bow our heads and pray for a moment.